All right. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this Friday, the 4th of July. Hey, it's the 4th of July. I saw some very funny memes from my American friends on social media, like portraits of George Washington saying, "Enjoy work today, England." So happy 4th of July to the Americans who may be joining us. Gareth, when are you registering this podcast? What do you mean registering it? I'm not sure I understand.
Well, you said there's a window until the end of July.
No. We've got by writ of existence. I mean, we've been here for
body of work.
Yeah, 11 years. So if you've been around that long, you get like automatic entry. But I don't think there are a lot of podcasts that have been around that long. So they all need to get in before the window closes.
Well, the average podcast dies after what, 8 episodes or something.
Yeah, I mean, most people don't have the staying power. Roxanne says, now I'm craving Woolies Lamingtons. Thanks, see, Ben.
We've got to make it happen. I'm going there. I'm going to make it happen.
Okay.
I'll even post it on social media to show that I'm a man of my word.
Okay, then.
I'm having cake today.
Good for you. Gareth, please look for a recent photo of Kathy Griffin. It'll make your day, says Carl DeSantos.
Oh, no. Are we getting inside the Carl spank tank again?
Oh, God. I don't know if I want
it's
to see
be
this.
A scary
I mean,
thing.
Kathy Griffin, the last time I saw her, I thought, And you know, it's not an age thing. It's not a woman thing. It's not a comedian thing. It's Kathy Griffin is like this confluence of so many bad things. I don't know how to explain it otherwise.
And it represents visually towards people.
Yeah, she looks how her mental health state is. She like the Liver King. He's a good another example, right?
Great example.
The Liver King looks like what's going on in his head.
Yeah,
and
turmoil and chaos.
It's turmoil, turmoil everywhere. It's a fucking disaster in there. It's like hellfire and sulfur. It's just bad. So show me Kathy Griffin. Okay, all right, it's still coming. It's obviously, it's destroying the internet on your phone, and soon James says, it's quite bad. Oh, my God.
Jeepers, that's It from Stephen King's It.
Fucking hell.
That's Pennywise the Clown.
What the hell's going on there?
But is that...
No, man.
Did she put a wig on, or is that just a receding hairline? I know a place.
No. James, is that the only photo you've got? Sure. Flex, see if you can find some others. That can't be real.
Can't be her.
That is absolutely devastating. Good heavens. Who goes out looking like that? I mean, if you do look like that, first of all, what's happening? Her hairline has gone back to the middle of her head. Go, show it again. Yeah. This is bad.
Flex
this
doesn't
is...
want to show it again. He's like, fuck it.
Okay. The hair is receding. Maybe it was always that far back and she has a 5 head. But... she had the fringe before, the bangs, you know? And so pale. And so,
Look, again, maybe It 3 is coming out and
she's got the role.
Like, so good on her, actually. I'm trying to find positives here.
Good heavens, that's awful. Kathy Griffin, yeah, looks like she could play It, says Carl from PE. James on his smoke break, says Goon. Bitcoin Butt agreeing with them. You know, it's just, she looks like she's quite fit, all done up though. Quite fit.
No, but that wasn't all done up though. That was just her 20 years ago.
I don't know. I'm just, you know what, Carl? You have ruined my morning. I was having a pretty good day until I had to see that.
Oh, but you like looking at stuff like that.
I do find the freaks of nature amusing. Can we talk more especially about sport this weekend?
What a weekend.
And can we talk about your plans for the weekend too?
So
they go together.
Look, my plans for the week obviously started this week on the Bounce Show. My mate Darvey, who's my smartest sports mate, and I give you the privilege of meeting him. So he's arranged a shuttle from Hyde Park. There's going to be like 8 or 10 of us.
Yeah.
And we're going to go through the Loftus straight to Beefield early because, you know, you got to do it right. You know, sometimes I ask people...
How early is early?
So we're going to get there at 3 to give us 2 hours of line in the stomach.
Okay.
You can get a good 4 or 5 drinks in there without rushing it, you know.
Are you going to have a car bar?
No. So the shuttle's going to drop us off and then we're going to go into the general morass of of life. Okay. And yeah, I think start with some beers. Okay. I think that's pretty much how it should be.
All right.
And then as you get closer to game time, then you move to the brandy. I feel like you can't start with brandy because the day is going to be a mess. And the thing is, you can't sustain beer the whole time. So there's got to be that transition. It's like in an F1 race when the rain comes down. You start on the slicks, but you're going to come in for the wet weather tires.
Okay.
And that's how we kind of approach it. So
you've got a plan.
If you're at Loftus tomorrow, Beefield, before the game, you know, like I enjoy going to a box. I've been to some lovely box experiences. But now when I look at it, I think, yeah, it's cool. You get there and someone serves you a drink and you got your own bar.
Yeah.
But you miss out on something like the Beefield at Loftus.
Yeah.
With all the people walking around, you get the tunnies, you get the kids running around. It's the full vibe.
Okay.
So by the time the anthem's actually like going and you're there and you're arm in arm with your mates, you're more into it. Like you can't get as much into an anthem in a box because you're sitting on your own chair, you got a glass in
your
hand.
You're like Kathy Griffin getting into character for it.
You've got it. So Beefields, 3 o'clock, we're going to do that. And then, yeah, the game, maybe go back to the Beefields afterwards and have a look around, see who's scrumming who. You know, because games of rugby break out at Loftus. It's a thing.
See if there are any Macy's who need saving from...
Yeah, have a look. Yeah, sure. So that's at 5 o'clock tomorrow. But if you do love the rugby, tomorrow's a huge day because it starts off, Gareth, at 5:30. The Wallabies are taking on Fiji. So obviously the British and Irish Lions are in Australia for the big tour. They play three tests. And the Wallabies are tuning up for this. They're going to play against Fiji. And then New Zealand are taking on France. France are too cool to go on these tours. So they send a whole bunch of youngsters who then get so fucking hammered. They do cocaine, stripping. When they went to Argentina,
really?
Three guys got arrested in the last tour to Argentina.
Where are they playing?
Well, I don't know. Some of the guys are still suspended. But yeah, France played fast and loose. They send these no-name oaks to go off in there, and then they just think, well, I'm probably not going to play for the main team. I'm just going to go get hammered. So that's all the dynamics. We've got massive games. And then the Lions, the British and Irish Lions, will take on New South Wales Waratahs at 12. So before the afternoon's already started, you've got three games you can get under the belt there. So by the time you come roaring into like the box versus Italy, what a day. And the box team is strong. That forward pack looks like it will beat anybody. The Italians, again, they're missing about, I would say, six first-team players. I guess the end of the season, the guy's like, nah, fuck it, I'm just going to go rest. I'm going to go drink wine or whatever. And it sucks for them because they come here and they play against the full-strength might of All Blacks or South Africa in these tours. And these Oaks are going to take a massive dicking tomorrow. I reckon box by at least 45. Tomorrow.
All right.
It's a strong team. And Damien Villanse, who's been out with injury, he's been so unlucky. He was the guy that jawled straight from the final all the way through, didn't get changed. He came onto the plane, got into this everything here. He still was in the same outfit. So it means a lot to him to be a double World Cup champion. He's back finally, which is really, really great. But Oxenchair, Malcolm Marks, Wilco Lowe, that'll make most grown men soil themselves when it comes to the first scrum of the day. No, really, Gareth. I mean, it is a feat of nature with numbers 1 to 8, how formidable these guys are. Lutiaga being back is just such a wonderful thing.
Okay.
Arkia Snaiman on the bench coming back is another beautiful thing. Like, there is just so much about this team that's so exciting. And I know going to this test match is fuck off expensive. You're in for about $1,200 to get a ticket. And then you got to spend another grand on piss and bury rolls and stuff. And I know it's costly. It's not for everyone. But what a thing to behold, the Springbok team on a Springbok Saturday. It's so glorious. It really is. Like, I'm so excited as a grown adult to be doing this tomorrow.
All right. That's great. Dirk says, Luit Eben Erge Mostert crazy. Okay. So people are enjoying. Booker by 42, says Gustav.
Yeah, it will be. It will be. But look, if you like other sports, of course, there's always a good mix. Wimbledon, for example, that's going into it now. We start at Wimbledon. The women's, who's always like cats on crack. Only the... I mean, look. Four of the five top seeds already out.
Cats on crack.
Wimbledon and women's seedings, anyone's game. If you like betting, you can have a dip at anybody. No one knows. Arina Sabalenka, she's still in there. She is the favorite to win it, obviously. The men's a bit more predictable. You know, the seeds will do a little bit better. But Draper, the English hope, I think he was like the fourth he was a low seed out. Full English. He went full English straight away. Out second round. But Jannik Sinner and Carlos Alcaraz, they, of course, are on a collision course to be playing next weekend's final. Djokovic is going to be there. He'll do what he can with his 38 years of age. But, you know, you're creaky after a while. And those Oaks, Alcaraz and Sinner, are like superhuman comparison.
Yeah, they're incredible.
They're young.
I really like Wimbledon. I mean, I get people who it's are great. Tennis fans. You know, they like the French Open and the Australian Open and the US Open. I don't care about those at all.
They're just
for
tournaments.
Me, the
Wimbledon's...
only thing that makes you the king or queen of tennis is Wimbledon.
It's like the Open Championship in golf. There's certain events that mean more.
It's got a gravitas to it that the others
very
do
well
not
put.
Have.
Very well
a
put.
A patina of true authority.
And that's exactly what it is.
The rest are pastiche.
Yeah, they are. They're just tournaments that make up a schedule. Wimbledon's like an event. Yeah. It's a thing that people who don't even care about tennis have people around to their house on a Sunday so they can get hammered on Pims and foist strawberries in your face. Like,
foist.
It's a beautiful thing. And this is what
foist Wimbledon all over everybody.
This is what makes these great sporting events great, and that you don't have to care about sport too much. It's just a cool thing to come together. But, look, that'll be playing all weekend. The big match is Sabalenka versus Raducanu. That'll be the big thing in the women's match. And then the men will carry on. But obviously there's lots of cricket as well. There's huge cricket at the moment. West Indies are doing pretty well against the Aussies. They bowled them up for 286 yesterday. That's in the second test match. England, for some strange reason, decided to win the toss and bowl. India were like, cheers, mate, awesome. They scored 587. Trousers down, six of the best right there. And now England in response is 77 for three. So that's a good test match. And for some bizarre fucking reason, Zimbabwe start test matches on the weekend, like Saturday, Sunday vibe. Is that because you guys couldn't rent the field during the week? Like, what's the story?
The school has the field during the week.
Second test is starting on Sunday. Like, guys, what is going on here? Anyway, so look, SA hammered them in the first test match, as they would, because they're the world champs, even with, you know, a more sort of fringe team. Second test, Zimbabwe versus SA, starts on Sunday. Vian Mulder will be the captain because Keshav Maharaj has got an injury. Much of the same. SA will do well. And that's pretty much it, the sport. Huh? You've got rugby out of every orifice. You've got cricket and you've got the Wimbledon. We're so covered. It's just a beautiful weekend of sport.
Well, some advice here from your friend Conco. Chris, you need to start the beers early on Saturday, Ben. Start with a shower beer, then a breakfast beer, then two beers on the shuttle. Set the pace early and keep it at at that level and maintain. Your baseline is a healthy buzz from there on.
Yeah, Conga Chris, I get you. But for me, the first beer has to be around your mates. That first beer buzz, you can't have it in the shower by yourself,
weirdo.
There's
just something. So you've given up on life when you're drinking on your own. Or you're going through a really tough time, in which case it's a coping mechanism, but it's still sad.
That first beer when it's just you and your mates.
Nunya Biz says, I named my male cat Meth. A recent poll showed Wimbledon is the favorite for more than 70% of people, next to the French Open, says Dirk.
Yeah, that was the poll on the bunch show.
Ah, there we are.
Dirk doesn't miss a thing.
See? Zim needs to sort out their power first, says Chase. Their electric grid collapsed completely. So that's, maybe that has something to do with it.
You start on a Sunday. Like, people watch sport over the weekend. Start on a Thursday, and then your test match will be on the weekend. No, we'll start on Sunday. So when the test match gets good, everyone will be at work. The fuck?
Nunez's female cat's called Crystal.
That's
Crystal and Meth. Very good. All right. Well, thank you, Ben. I look forward to hearing about your Pretoria adventures.
Yeah. Follow me on the Instagram, The Bounce. You'll see my updates.
Nothing boring about that.
You'll see me cruising around and get to the On The Bounce show, because we actually recap the first 6 months of the year this week. So On The Bounce show here on The Real Network.
And by the way, people are also talking about the Tour de France.
Yes, that's also going to be happening.
It starts on Saturday.
Yeah.
Matthew Dixon says, I have a better idea. Don't drink at all.
For what reason? I'm not driving the shuttle.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Thanks, Ben. And we're going
Nice week in the studio. Weekend. Have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, lovely. All right. So we've got somebody in here who has not been on the show for some time, but I'm very excited to speak to him. His name is Richard Wilkinson. So he's a South African attorney and SAST. He focuses on all kinds of issues, most especially critical race theory and gender ideology in South African schools. These things are being taught. You know, it's the old trope or bullshit story of, no, we don't teach that stuff at schools. Then you catch them teaching it at schools. Then they're like, well, it's not what you think it is. Then you figure out it is what you think it is. And then they say, no, well, it's good that we are doing it. That's how it moves. It goes from we're not doing it to it's not what you think it is to, okay, yeah, we are doing it and it's good. That's kind of what's happened in South African schools over the last while. So I'm happy to have Richard here. It's funny, I was talking to him just yesterday about this and now he's sitting here. To date, he's authored 26 articles on all of these topics. He's played a prominent role in ongoing controversies at Pretoria Girls High School. He conducts his research and writing on school capture independently. So he has no external funding, no financial compensation. And I think it's a brave thing to do. So let's just sketch for the benefit of people who don't know you at all, Richard. Thank you for coming. Let's just sketch how you got involved in this in the first place, because you're an attorney. You didn't have to get involved in this stuff. Mm. As I understand it, you don't have daughters at Pretoria Girls High. No. So people are like, well, why do you give a shit?
Yeah, well thanks for having me on, Gareth. Sure, good to be here. I think it's been about a year since we last chatted. Yeah, look, no kids. There's no wife or anything like that. And so I think it is a natural question is why am I interested in this? I was at the University of Cape Town from 2007 to 2011.
So you watched it fall to pieces?
No, I was there before it fell to pieces, but I saw it bubbling up.
You saw the Rhodes Must Fall movement growing?
No, I saw critical race theory,
which
is a more theoretical thing.
Okay.
And so I was, you know, BCom, LLB, mainly commerce and law faculties, but also humanities faculty for a while. And I, you know, I saw some of the stuff where they were blending identity politics with Marxism.
Right.
And I thought, this is poison. I studied a course in final year, which was jurisprudence, which involved critical race theory. And I just thought, this is mad. And then something interesting happened after I left. I think social media reached a tipping point, mainly Twitter. And then Rhodes Must Fall happened in 2015. And I think the importance of that moment is really seminal in not just South Africa, but across the world.
No, because it spread yeah. everywhere. It went over to the UK and then over to the US as quickly as it possibly could.
Absolutely. And the stuff ping-pongs across the Atlantic. So, you know, we do Rhodes Must Fall. Next thing, they're tearing down statues of, you know, Columbus and New York and so on. And then we then mimic and copycat the stuff that radical activists are doing in the US. And I was extremely concerned about this. And, you know, when Rhodes Must Fall happened, you think, oh, well, this will just be a month or two, you know, it'll fizzle out.
Right.
Well, obviously, it didn't. And we now know that it mutated into Fees Must Fall, it then metastasized across the country, and it's caused billions of rands of damage to universities. You know, I've had a lot of former lecturers who became friends of mine who, you know, I spoke to, and I could just see the damage that was done. I was pretty horrified by that. And then I noticed it came into the schools. And that's when, you know, I guess there was a phase of my life where I was too scared to write publicly about this. You're scared of being cancelled.
Sure. And they've come after you. They've come after me.
Yeah, they tried. But something snapped recently where the tables turned a bit. You know, I think you probably feel that as well. I mean, here we are in your studio. You're not employed by anybody, right? I mean, you're running your own thing. Something happened where the pushback against
woke is broken.
Woke is broken.
But there are a couple of fundamental things we've just got to go over, and I know you're probably tired of this, but I assume because you're tired of it, you've got the most succinct and straightforward explanation for a lot of this stuff.
Sure.
So let's start at the beginning. For people who don't know, what is critical race theory? You mentioned that it's a blend of identity politics and Marxism.
Yeah.
Is that the standard definition, and can you explain it a little bit for people who don't know what that means?
I think that's probably the best explanation. So Marxism traces its roots obviously all the way back to Marx, and it was successful in Russia, the Russian Revolution.
Class struggle.
There
are the oppressed and the oppressors.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who has done well by virtue of the fact that their outcomes are better than other people have obviously undermined, stolen, and oppressed other people to get there. Nothing is by your own industry, it's all about things that are unfair, and the system is rallied against other people.
That's right. And so the working class, the workers of the world, must unite, and they must throw off their chains.
And it's grievance politics.
It's grievance politics.
I'm not happy, so it must be someone else's fault.
Absolutely.
The locus of responsibility is never inside.
Yeah.
It's always outside. It's the government. It's the police. It's business. It's the law. It's whatever else. It can't possibly be me.
they write about the superstructures of society, and they always feel that if you you know, have a radical revolution, that will lead to some utopian future. It never does. It always leads to millions of people dead.
And equal misery for those who survive.
Yeah.
But okay, at its most charitable, it is about trying to create equal outcomes across all people, all ages, all races, all classes, all genders. We want the most equal outcome. In other words, you will all end up with the same.
Yeah.
That's the heartbeat of Marxism.
That's the theory of Marxism,
And then identity politics?
Well, I think Marxism ran out of steam. They lost a lot of credibility with Stalin. This is all ancient history now.
They lost a lot of credibility with Stalin.
And you know, Pol Pot in Cambodia. You know,
these guys, they didn't burnish the CV of Marxism. No.
Although it's extraordinary the extent to which Marxist professors in Western universities would defend Stalin. You know.
Oh, not just defend, but even eulogize and lionize him. So that's an interesting point too, is that everybody knows Hitler was bad, right? You don't need to, you won't get a Nobel Prize for pointing out the obvious. Hitler was a bad guy. 6 million Jews and many millions of other people, the blood of World War II, the deaths of so many good people in the world are on his hands. But the same people who accept that are sometimes loath to accept that Stalin was a bad person at all, and certainly not that he wasn't as bad as Hitler.
Yeah. What's interesting is that the Soviet Union is more than happy to go along with Hitler until 1942, when Hitler invaded Russia, and suddenly they decided they were...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean,
the von Ribbentrop Pact and all that.
Molotov. Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact was between the Nazis and the communists, and they would have been quite happy to keep that in place had things not got fractious between Hitler and Stalin later on down the line. Okay, so let's look at identity politics.
So it all fizzles out in the mid-20th century, right? Because I don't know, I think it's
And also the
difficult.
Class system starts to break down.
Class system breaks down.
Probably also because of upward mobility, capitalism, the ability for people to go and seek a different kind of future for themselves. Mm. And outside of Europe, the class system doesn't really exist to the same degree.
Correct. And they just couldn't get their revolution to work in America. And so these guys were very depressed and very despondent in the 1960s. And in Paris, there were a group of philosophers.
Foucault,
Derrida. Yeah. And these guys were Marxists who just pivoted away from class. And
we've got to keep the zombie alive. Mm. Let's find a new way to do it. And what came along to fill that gap?
Identity.
Yeah. Identity politics, which is a fairly novel phenomenon to people who've only discovered it on social media. But this also came about because of Marcuse and people like that in the 70s.
Herbert Marcuse, yeah.
Right. I mean, they came up with the idea that the most important thing you can do is not be colorblind, but be color conscious the whole time.
Yeah.
You talk about blackness and whiteness, and you talk about the disparities between them, and you talk about how it's a system that's, again, rallied against the one group and for the other.
Yeah.
And it's not just that. It's also sexism. Mm. So it's also your gender is the most important thing about you.
Yeah.
Well, sexuality became a part of that. Then gender, you could argue. Yeah. And race and all those things, which are identity things. It's how people identify themselves. You identify yourself as being part of a group rather than being an individual. And Marxism, like a fucking virus, climbed in there and metastasized and mutated into something else.
Absolutely right.
And that's what we are being taught, or what is being taught to our children at schools in South Africa.
Yeah, so I saw this coming up the universities 2007 to 2011. It was a university grade course then. Rhodes must fall, and the kids were then quite clearly indoctrinated into it. If you look at some of the young activists in 2015, they were just parroting, you know, Derrida.
Why do you think it found such fertile ground in their minds? What was going on with students in South Africa? These are people, by the way, I mean, a tiny percentage of South Africans get to go to university.
Yeah, yeah.
An even tinier percentage of those get to study things like philosophy and various ideologies and the humanities subjects, because most people go to university to get a qualification so they can get a job.
Yeah.
but a very small smattering of herbs on the top. Those people tend to study the more numinous stuff.
Yeah, sure.
And that's where all of this comes in. Now, yes. How does Marxist identity politics, critical race theory, how does it find such fertile ground in the minds of supposedly the cleverest people? Mm. What is missing from their lives? What kind of hole is there and what shape is it that needs to be filled by this?
Yeah, it's almost a quasi-religious movement. There's almost a need for struggle, you know, for, right. for being...
There's
for
a bit
being,
of struggle envy.
Certainly struggle envy.
There's a bit of godlessness.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a bit of... New Age
narcissism,
narcissism. Yeah. I think that's a good that's a good three-headed beast.
Yeah,
to need
that's what
to satiate, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So how does it develop from the universities and get into the schools?
So that's an interesting question. What happened is that a lot of the activists sort of turned this into a bit of a like full-time career, right? So many of them had younger siblings. That's certainly the feedback that I get from teachers is that this all erupted in 2020 after George Floyd happened, May 2020. June 2020, what happened is that there was an enormous online, this is starting to get quite old now, it's now 5 years on, but there was a huge online protest against racism in various schools across the country. And it was hectic. It was, you know, really, really aggressive stuff.
Did we have a problem with racism? Is that where this came from?
Well,
was racism?
That's what I've been looking into. Is what exactly are the allegations? What exactly are the findings? What are the legal reports? Because you get enormous press coverage of these.
Oh no, the press is addicted to stories about race because it gets them clicks and because it wakes up old, long dead South African ghosts and reanimates them.
Absolutely. So the press goes for it, right? And these teachers are under so much pressure, and the headmistresses and headmasters and the Department of Education's there, Human Rights Commission's getting involved. Mm-hmm. The EFF is protesting at the gates. They're baying for blood. Somebody needs to be put into it. So they do an investigation. They find some teachers. They either leave or they get put into a disciplinary. And my job has been to look into this and figure out, is there any substance to this? And I wrote an article called The Woke Witch Hunt at St. Mary's Waverley, because it's actually quite hard to get hold of these reports. So Mary's Waverley, to their great credit, published their report. It was a 56-page report written by Advocate Tandi Olane and Zanele Masuk. And I scrutinized it and wrote an article about why I thought it was severely unsatisfactory. And there were a number of teachers who lost their jobs at St. Mary's, had their careers terminated because they had been labeled as being racist. I looked into it. And the biggest problem with the report is that it all revolves around microaggressions.
Oh, is this like, you know, a teacher comments that a black girl's hair is out of control because she's not, you know, her hair is not according to the regulations, and then that's regarded as a racist aggression?
Well,
is that what we're talking about?
Part of the problem is I still don't know what the allegations were at St. Mary's. It's a 56-page report, and it says sort of undisclosed microaggressions.
Well, it's bullshit. It's all in the eye of the beholder.
They're too embarrassed to say what the actual allegations are.
Because it's probably nonsense.
Because microaggressions could be complimenting a black child on doing well, or criticizing them, or asking someone where they're from.
And the power is in the hands of a child.
It's in the hands of a child.
Okay, so when you give a child the ability to be the center of attention, they will take it every time.
That's the problem.
And if you apply rules, they will, and those rules are bendable, they will find ways to bend them every time. This is what every parent and every person who's ever observed a child will know to be true, that if you allow them to be the arbiter of good, bad, right, wrong, I'm hurt or I'm offended or I'm complimented, they will choose whichever one gets them the most attention. Mm. So you should never allow kids at school to be this kind of power.
Yeah. So what happened at a lot of schools is that there was an enormous amount of activism and controversy, protesting and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And then very quietly after investigating these schools for months, they had released a report which would be sort of on page 7 of the newsletter saying, St. Cillian's College, for example, my former school, they put out a newsletter saying that, you know, we investigated all the allegations and the findings of the law firm was that no further action needed to be taken in respect to this matter.
So in other words, nothing happened?
Well, nothing. I mean, a number of teachers left because they were so traumatized by it all. But,
yeah, sure.
You know, you can't actually identify anything. similar outcome at St. Anne's College in KwaZulu-Natal, as far as I can tell. I said, did anyone get fired? What happened? And, you know,
why are they targeting, and why is it always the best schools in the country that are in the firing line and in the headlines about this stuff? Why is it not shitty little schools that none of us have ever heard of?
Because this is an obsession of the elite. You know, Franz Cronier, I think someone who you've interviewed before and someone you have a lot of respect, mutual respect. You know, I think he's probably the best analyst in South Africa.
I think he has a better finger on the pulse of what's actually going on in this country than almost anyone else I've ever met.
Absolutely. And he does quantitative and qualitative research into South African opinions. And France has been saying for many years that the bulk of South Africa's population is very moderate, actually sometimes quite fiercely conservative, not radical, not radicalized. And that's his big contribution. And that's why a party like the EFF struggles to get into double figures. And most South Africans are actually just pretty moderate and are not filled with, you know.
But the reason I asked you why it's happening at all these elite schools, I mean, you think about the kinds of things parents have to do to get their kids into those schools, to be able to pay for their kids to get a good education in these schools. And then there are all these political distractions which take their eye off the ball. You should not, if you're paying an absolute fortune to go to one of the best schools in South Africa, have to worry about your kid being indoctrinated with critical race theory or becoming an activist part-time at school, or to be in the firing line of someone else who's an activist and who's there to sharpen a cudgel, which you are wholly unprepared for as a parent to defend your child from. Mm. This is not stuff that a teacher wants to get into teaching for, particularly if you've worked a long and successful career as a teacher, educating many brilliant, bright young minds. You get to a point where your CV is such that you are offered a job at one of the best schools, and you get there only to be pilloried by some smart-mouthed kid who's been indoctrinated by nonsense from Robin DiAngelo.
Robin DiAngelo, what happens is they have older siblings who've been indoctrinated at the university, and that's how it gets into the schools. The older siblings sort of go to the younger siblings and, you know, impart their
wisdom.
They must get a job. And some of them have got jobs as diversity consultants, and then they come into the schools.
Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. But talk about the schools.
France's big thing is to say that the bulk of South Africa's population is moderate. My big contribution is to say that whilst the bulk of the population is moderate, South Africa's elites are nuts. Our elites in South Africa.
What do you mean by elites?
I think
they're
four professions, and I've sort of moved variously between the four. The one is academia.
Right.
University professors. They are radical. I've written about how the education faculty at Nelson Mandela University is indoctrinating trainee teachers into critical race theory. It's now a major, major part of when you go study to be a teacher. So you've got to sort of study Marcuse and you've got to study...
This is not out of step with what's happening in America.
It's copy-paste.
Where academia is completely rotten to the core with leftist, Marxist bullshit.
Absolutely. The next profession is your profession of broadcasting media. And media and journalism. Radical, right? These journalists who are standing outside Pretoria Girls baying for blood, they're not there in an objective, neutral manner.
No,
they are there.
They're not reporters.
They are loving it. They're enjoying it. The guy who I think caused more damage than anybody else is no longer with us, Eusebius Mckayser. He would sit on 702
Radio.
I get
a reminder every week that he's dead on my phone.
Yeah, I mean, the damage he caused to these teachers in 2020 is just off the charts. So you've got academia, journalism, law, and politics. The lawyers are radical and the politicians are radical. And these four professions sort of are self-referential. So you'll have journalists creating a controversy, lawyers coming in to investigate. The lawyers find a problem based on critical race theory. They then recommend diversity consultants who come in. The diversity consultants come in. They indoctrinate the kids some more. And then you have more controversy. And so it's a vicious circle.
It's interesting, these diversity consultants. Mm. You would think that this is a fairly obvious thing. It's like being able to make something that tastes nice as opposed to something that tastes shit. If you add a little salt or pepper, it usually spices up the dish in the right way. Diversity is not a complicated subject. Sure. And in most places, we know what it is. It's actually just code for not white and not male. Am I wrong?
Well, it's Marxism.
When people talk about diversity in America, for example, they mean anything that's not white and not male.
It's a difficult thing to counter because the packaging is so good. And I mean, who would be opposed to diversity? Who's sure, opposed to equity, like a good thing. Inclusion? So, so you're saying you're opposed to diversity? Yeah, you're opposed to inclusion? Of course not.
You want an option of a menu that's as broad as possible in every kind of profession, every kind of part of society. Sure.
I visited St. Mary's Waverley. It is a diverse, happy school. And I walk in there and girls sitting on the lawn, black and white, very happily playing with each other. The
kids, Most people in society are fine. Carrying on that way.
The kids are fine. You go to St. John's College. I had someone at St. John's College sent me photos of their grandkid's birthday, which is just a wonder. It is exactly what you'd want from South Africa. Pretoria Girls is a school that is 80% black, 13% white, 7% brown. And the kids get along fine.
I mean, that pretty much represents the demographics of South Africa to a T.
It's wonderful. Nobody has a problem with any of that. What then happens is that people pretend that there is division and problems in an environment, and they then send in the diversity consultants who then legitimize and validate what's going on, and they radicalize people. And they leave in their wake a school that is divided, that was never divided before. And they've done the same thing in corporates across America.
And they get paid a lot of money for this.
Yeah, and I've written about how sometimes there can be a bit of an ethical concern about this, where on the one hand they're sort of hyping up the allegations and then also offering a sort of media management consulting.
They command you to be sick, and they command you to be healthy, but they make you sick.
Yeah,
and then they offer the cure.
It's like someone turning up to a perfectly healthy person saying, "You have cancer. We're putting you on chemotherapy."
And by the way,
we're going to charge you for it.
And I can provide the chemotherapy.
And I'm the one who's telling you you're on.
Yeah, these are unnecessary parasites.
Unnecessary parasites. Which
is not surprising because most communist identity politics people are also parasitic.
You don't need a lot of these people. You know, like as I said before, Frans Cronje has said many times, the bulk of South Africa's population is moderate.
Sure.
And you'll find the same thing in many of these other countries in history, Germany and Russia and Cambodia.
So but if you who's falling for this ruse?
I don't know if anyone's falling for it, but
someone's paying these stupid diversity consultants. I mean, I mentioned Robin DiAngelo just now. You told me that she's been to South Africa.
She's been to South Africa.
Yeah. She's been grifting here in our backyard.
She turned up to several universities in, I can't remember the precise year, I think it was 2020, and trained the diversity consultants who then went into the schools.
This is the woman who wrote White Fragility.
White Fragility, Nice Racism.
She's been a mainstay on the circuit in left-wing American circles for a while, much praised by the intellectual classes, but completely humiliated by a recent outing on Matt Walsh's Am I Racist, he made a complete mockery of her and revealed that she pretty much is willing to appear anywhere and say anything, provided the fee is right. Mm. I think she's been leveled, which is a good thing. But it took a long time and it took a lot of effort. And people like this are still out there grifting. There are lots of them. Here in South Africa, there are whole companies of people who are selling this bullshit.
Absolutely. Now, I've written how many? 27, 28 of these articles. I've got another 20 to go. And when I started on this course, you know, it really wasn't clear that we'd ever win this battle because these guys were rampant. I mean, they were just hitting one school after another. And you're asking who falls for it? What happens is that they bully the school we're sort of horrified by these allegations. We will take them very seriously. And then they bully them into an apology. And as soon as you give an apology, that's an acknowledgement of wrongfulness. Mm-hmm. You then have this sort of witch hunt investigation and a couple of teachers get fired. But you have to demonstrate that you are committed to systemic reform of your institution. And so we got to bring someone.
Like when the president says we're going to launch a committee to investigate this, it makes people who are angry about it, it placates them because they think, okay, something's being done. Of course, nothing happens. Yeah.
And then the consultants come in and it's really quite horrifying. And some of these schools, they held no adults sort of meetings with a grade of girls. And they're incredibly emotionally manipulative. It always seems to be the girls' school more than the boys' schools. But the consultants come in and the girls go home in tears. You know, we had this at Fishhook High School.
Well, we know why. Because they are far more susceptible to a social contagion than young boys are.
Yeah.
And than adults would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Jordan Peterson's
fertile ground again.
Spoken about it. I'm not qualified to give you the sort of the exact explanation for it, but these consultants come into the schools, they divide the staff room, they radicalize the kids, And and then the good thing about a school is it's a bit like a river, like water flowing through a river. 2020 was a particularly toxic sort of vintage, but it flows through. And then you get a fresh water, right? And I think that's where we are at the moment. But this stuff won't die unless you actually bury it. And that's what I've tried to do and what I intend to wrap up by the end of this year, early next year, is writing about what happened so that people understand what happened. We don't fall for the same mistakes again. And you actually have to shut this stuff down. And that's what brings us to Pretoria Girls.
Okay, yeah, because there's a new development.
There's a new development to Pretoria Girls. I've written 9 articles on this topic because I think it's really important that people understand how ludicrous the situation is. And what makes Pretoria Girls different to all these other schools is that I was actually there when it happened. Whereas I'm writing about these other schools in a retrospective historical perspective. You know, I can take the legal report from St. Mary's and write about it. I can take Rodine's discipline. Okay, I can interview people.
So give us the elevator
pitch. Pretoria Girls,
I
got contacted by a parent there in July last year. So that was exactly a month ago. And his daughter had been suspended. I went through to Pretoria. There were 12 girls who had been suspended. I looked at the WhatsApp conversation. There was nothing there that was remotely racist. The girls were running were in a WhatsApp group. And the one girl complained because she got into a fight, well, not into a fight, but got into an argument with a black girl at the school to do with uniform, the application of uniform rules. The black girl had said that the uniform rules are not applied evenly between the races. And she said in her WhatsApp group, that made me feel so uncomfortable, and I actually burst into tears. And some of the other girls said, be so sick of the race baiting going on in the school. Mm-hmm. And if anyone should be unhappy about double standards, it's actually us, because when we apply to university or when we try to get into Gauteng netball teams,
which
and
is
that's
true.
And that's the end of the conversation.
All of it true and probably reflective of so much of what happens in society at large. So nothing unusual.
That's right. The Gauteng Department of Education hypes this thing in a way that I didn't even believe was possible.
Was this when Panyaza Lesufi was still
he was
very
the premier.
Involved?
He's
the premier already.
He's the premier.
Okay. So you said a year ago.
Okay. Yeah. And anyway, they had this disciplinary. I was assisting them. I wrote some articles. And
who's
then,
the disciplinary against? The girls?
The girls. Yeah. But the school was forced into initiating. The school said, we don't want to do a disciplinary. There's nothing here. And the department said, you will do a disciplinary. So anyway, they then have this disciplinary media circus. They couldn't even have it at the school because of safety concerns, because the EFF was at the gates chanting, kill the Boer, kill the farmer, with a bunch of other schoolgirls who were singing, kill the Boer, kill the farmer, at the gates of the school. So they had to move it to a hotel somewhere else in Pretoria. The press were baying for blood. They were found not guilty. There was an intervention by an advocate who read my work, who came in and assisted the girls. They were found not guilty. And I thought in August 2024 that would be the end of the matter, but it wasn't. It just escalated. The department then picked their own lawyer to do a 2-week investigation into a culture of racism at the school. Not the WhatsApp group, just a general culture of racism.
These grifters, it strikes me that they are so hungry for racism. They're so hungry for the tiniest possible observation of what they think might be inferred as racism, because without it, they have no reason to live. So, these grifters are desperate for racism.
Well, I think it fits into Panyaza Lesufi's political program.
Sure.
He's trying to generate a division in South African society. He's trying to break up the cooperation
between... They have to dig deep to find it, though, huh?
They have to dig deep, and so they did. And they did a 2-week investigation, became 95-day investigation. They interviewed everybody. They looked at everything. And then they then call this press conference at the school where they say, here's our big report into a culture of racism. They haven't released the report.
Why not?
They refused to release the report. The school put in a PIA request that was declined. They took them to urgent court.
By the way, this is hugely damaging to the school's reputation.
Enormously
until
damaging
it's released.
To the school's reputation.
So the school needs this thing to be set adrift and left alone.
Yeah.
So they can carry on with the job of educating young minds.
Yeah. The lawyer who... And they get fantastic matric results. I mean, this is a school that's 80% black, 13% white, 7% brown, getting 99% matric exemption. They're doing phenomenally. I visited the school once. Amazing facilities. It's a world-class school. And yet the Gauteng government just wants to break it down. They eventually put the principal into a disciplinary.
If only they'd put that much effort into
fixing
a township school, for example.
Exactly.
I mean, can you imagine if the Premier's attention was brought to bear on schools in parts of Gauteng which really need his help.
Toilets, teenage pregnancy, alcoholism.
We have such severe problems.
Yeah.
But it seems that racism always accelerates right to the top of that.
The demand,
even if it's if it's the most indirect, watered down, thought crime type racism you could imagine. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, the demand for racism exceeds the supply.
Sure.
And that's because people have a political program to run. Anyway, the principal gets put into a disciplinary along with some other senior staff. Incidentally, Thabo Mbeki got involved in this matter. He sort of read my stuff. He turned up to the school, interviewed some people, interviewed the department, looked at the WhatsApp group, wrote a 13-page report. Former leader of the ANC.
What did he think?
This is absolute garbage.
Really?
He accused the Gauteng government, the spokesman, of fabricating a lot of the stuff that he was putting into the media.
Bet you didn't think you'd end up on the same side as Thabo Mbeki.
I never imagined I would end up on the same side as Thabo
Mbeki. Former president, yeah.
When Thabo Mbeki is coming to your department and saying, guys, this is absurd, then you need to do some introspection, okay? So anyway.
Did they?
No. They pressed on, put the principal into a disciplinary, three charges. One, she didn't handle the WhatsApp group correctly, which is nonsensical. It's nonsensical because we've just determined there's nothing wrong in the WhatsApp group, so how could she mishandle it? She was found not guilty on that charge. There were two other charges which somehow came out of this report. They've got nothing to do with racism. They've got to do with misgovernance or mismanagement. The one charge is that her husband...
cut the lawn or something.
Yeah, he was volunteering in an unpaid capacity, and this was known to the school governing body, approved in writing by the school governing body that he was going to volunteer in the school gardens, and he did. And he was helping prune the roses and do landscaping.
I mean, what a nice chap.
Yeah, he's just doing it as a hobby, basically. Yeah. And they said that that could give rise to the impression of nepotism. And their big thing is that on the 4th of March 2024, there's an access log.
Who alleged this? The governing body or the department?
The department set up an investigation into a culture of racism at the school. And this is what they found after their 95-day investigation.
They found that. That the husband of the principal was pruning the roses for free.
Yeah.
That's all they could find?
Their big thing is that he took a...
What a disgrace. What an embarrassment.
Took a vehicle off campus, right? And so therefore, that's misuse of a school property. What he did is he took a school backie to build his warehouse to collect some gardening equipment and then came back to the school. And he also collected some terracotta pots that were being donated to the school.
You have to really run out of options for that to be the story.
That's the depths we're plumbing. Now, if I didn't write my stuff, nobody would know about this because the media would just take the spokesman's narrative and run with it. There was also another allegation about the appointment of the finance manager.
Let me say this. I think the Department of Education in Gauteng
is a predatory organization.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah.
That you've cooked up all of this shit, and the best you can do is find that the husband of the principal at a school that you've declared as being a school with a culture of racism, the best you can do is find that her husband is voluntarily and in his own free time coming to prune the roses at your school. You are appalling. Every person at the Department of Education in Gauteng should hang their heads in shame. You command a part of the budget that you are not entitled to, which you waste. We have the lowest levels of literacy and numeracy in the whole of Africa coming out of this continent, out of this country, out of your department probably largely. And you're not running any school satisfactorily. For you to be pointing at Pretoria Girls High School, for example, it's just unbelievable what you think you can get away with. And although most of the media will just, as Richard said, go and put out your press releases as if they're the truth, verbatim, the rest of us are not falling for it anymore. Well done to you. Well done for
Thank
doing
you.
This.
That's, well, thanks, Gareth. But, you know, one final point I just need to make is that what's happened at Pretoria Girls is not even the first incident at Pretoria Girls. We had a similar thing happen in 2016. Happened in 2020. It's like the Olympics. Every 4 years, the school gets hit. And similar things have happened at dozens of schools across the country, right? Just down the road from Pretoria Girls, you've got St Mary's DSG and you've got Cornwall Hill College. I haven't written about them yet. You've got the boarding schools in KwaZulu-Natal. I haven't written about them yet. You've got the schools in the Cape. I haven't written about them yet. I would say that there are 40 or 50 schools that have gone through something similar to Pretoria Girls. And in almost every instance, the allegations are either completely bogus, completely unfair, wildly exaggerated, or just nonsensical. And I'm committed to writing about all of this until the public narrative starts to become a little bit less mad.
I think your timing is excellent because you've now established a reputation and a credibility in what you're doing. I think woke is broken. I don't think it's going to be fixed. I think cancel culture is now a thing of the past.
Yeah.
Good luck to anyone who tries that with someone like you or me, because it's not going to work. Mm. And to any, you know, student, pupil, learner who's thinking about making this their magnum opus, I wish you luck. I think that time has passed too. I think really you should focus on maths, science, language, engineering,
entrepreneurship,
building this country. The days of becoming grifters like those people who've been paid hundreds of thousands of rands to come into South African schools and make them worse, those days are over.
I hope so. I hope so.
Well, keep up your good work. I know that we managed to get you at the last minute because you have a day job. You have actual work to do.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming to see us this morning. And I hope we'll see you again soon. Keep writing your great articles. Where can people find out more?
Schoolcapture.com and my Twitter profile.
Schoolcapture.com.
Yeah, with a little dash between school and capture. And thank you for what you've done. You're one of the few shining lights in South African media, and it's great to see your growth and success, because when there's a desert of quality content out there, you know, when people
and
come across
Eusebius is still dead, which is great.
Yeah, well, right. I'm doing his damage.
Yeah, well, keep doing that good work. All right, thanks everybody. That's all we got time for this Friday. Have an awesome weekend, and we will see you next week, Monday, 6 a.m. bright and early. Ciao.